Morgan, Monitor, March 30th. As you heard on the news, NBC will cover the special ceremonies in Washington for former President Dwight D. Eisenhower beginning in about an hour and a half. Meanwhile, we'll continue with Monitor features and music.
There's a certain sound always follows me around. When you're close to me, you will hear it. It's the sound that lovers hear when they discover there could be no other for their love. It's my
prepared your tax return and sent it off by now, haven't you? Well, in case you haven't, Monitor's giving you some help on that problem this weekend, but we thought it might be interesting to find out who gets the form after you've done your arithmetic. Turns out it's a nice, sympathetic machine. Ron Parsley reports from Andover, Massachusetts.
1969 is the third year of operation of the Internal Revenue Service Computer Center in Andover, Massachusetts. The computer, actually a trinity of machines, constantly cross-checking one another, analyzes every tax return in the North Atlantic region, comprised of the six New England states and New York. The Honeywell computer system handles 13.5 million individual tax returns, plus 4.5 million corporate returns at the rate of 175,000 per day. The Andover IRS Center, which houses the computer, is the largest of seven such centers in the country, and through it passes 17% of the nation's tax returns and 24% of the nation's revenue. The computer itself runs 24 hours a day, and when not handling tax returns, it grinds out the more mundane fare of bills, notices, and mailing lists. But for all of its awesome responsibility, the computer is really a sensitive creature. Enclosed in a room kept dust-free by constant air filtering with temperature and humidity control, the tender electronic giant has a retinue of 130 valets devoted to its care and feeding. Prime Minister of this transistorized dynasty is Norman E. Morrill, Director of the Internal Revenue Service Center. While many taxpayers tend to think of the computer as an electronic bloodhound ready to sniff out and tree those of us guilty of a mathematical indiscretion, actually, on the plus side of the ledger, the computer is responsible for refunding over $1 billion a year. And anyone who gives away that kind of money can't be all bad. This is Ron Parshley in Andover, Massachusetts, speaking for NBC Monitor.
Later, we'll hear a human tax expert explain some of the things the machine does not like. For instance, if you put down an incorrect Social Security number, your tax return will be selected for audit. The machine's a stickler for accuracy. We'll hear about people who don't pay any income tax, rich people, in 1 minute here on the Monitor Beacon. Hello, this is Jack Hayes with news of what's happening in our town. New York's Window on Nature, the American Museum of Natural History, celebrates its 100th birthday this April. 100 years of exhibition, exploration, and expeditions. 100 years of wonder. Plan to visit the museum that's famous all over the world. The American Museum of Natural History is free of charge, open 7 days a week, and located on Central Park West at 79th Street. The American Red Cross in Greater New York is having a free recording session next Saturday, April 5th, from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. to give families an opportunity to send messages to their servicemen. Recording sessions will be held at the Red Cross Center, 150 Amsterdam Avenue. That's at 66th Street in Manhattan. Just drop in on Saturday. You're invited to attend a Good Friday memorial service marking the first anniversary of the assassination of the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King, Jr., to be held in the main sanctuary of Antioch Church, 828 Green Avenue, located between Lewis and Stuyvesant Avenues, Brooklyn, at 8 p.m. Friday, April 4th.
WNBC, Radio 660, New York.
Music on Monitor, Glenn Yarbrough with Somehow, Someday.
Another day, the sun will set upon the empty hours of a lonely man. There beyond my searching eyes remains the one and only dream I'm hoping for.
Taxes. And we're going to examine the returns of the rich with writer Philip Stern. He's written a book on the subject called The Great Treasury Raid. Byron Rash, NBC News, Washington, interviewed him.
Mr. Stern, in your book, you tell of individuals who have incomes in excess of $1 million a year but pay no federal taxes. How many such people are there?
Well, in the last year for which such figures are available, there were 21 people with incomes of $1 million or more who paid not a penny of federal income tax. You don't have to stop at $1 million. In 1966, there were four people with incomes of more than $5 million.
And paid no income tax?
And paid not a penny of income tax. Oil people get to deduct their original investment twice. They get to deduct it not over a period of years, but in the, most of it in the same year that they made it. And when the oil well begins producing, those deductions go on and on and on, even if they recover their original investment 7 or 8 or 9 times.
Well, there's a good deal to talk about the oil loopholes, but aren't there other loopholes similar to that?
Yes, there are, but I want to point this out. Taking advantage of that, there are many oil multimillionaires who seem to sort of regard it as a credo that they should never, never pay any taxes to the federal government. And by drilling up whatever, as they call it, they figure out what their potentially taxable income is going to be, and they instruct their attorneys, whenever you see any income that might be subject to taxation, go and invest in some oil wells and give me some deductions. And there's one man who sold $50 million worth of oil in a 12-year period and never, over that whole 12-year period, paid one penny of income tax.
Well, how can such loopholes exist?
Well, they exist because Congress writes them into the law. You know, Congress knows what it's doing. Those things are put in the law, and they're used. Everybody knows that they're used. I must say I was a little astounded that a, quote, high official of the Nixon administration said that the disclosure of the 155 people with incomes of more than 200,000 who paid no taxes, he said that was inflammatory, as if this was a big secret. Anybody, by looking at a certain government table that's public every year, can figure out how many of these rich people don't pay taxes. He said it didn't necessarily mean anything. You don't have to draw any pictures to know the meaning of the fact that 2 million people are below the poverty level and paying taxes, and 155 people are getting hundreds of thousands of income and paying nothing.
Makes you wish you were oil people, doesn't it? Because if there's one thing I'm not interested in outdoing the Rockefellers in, it's paying taxes. I don't want my tax payment to be bigger than theirs. My car, maybe, not my taxes.
So he told you that you're the dream that he's been searching for. And he told you that you'd never met anyone like you before. And I can hear him telling you your lips taste just like sherry wine. But he told me that he's known as Johnny One Time. Morning.
one time. Now monitor sports. Major League Baseball lost a beloved friend with the passing of President Eisenhower. A report from Baseball Commissioner Bowie Kuhn and sports editor Len Dillon on Monitor's open line.
Commissioner Bowie Kuhn, does baseball have any plans for the weekend, or for that matter for the coming week, with regards to honoring or paying respect to General Eisenhower's memory?
Yes, Len. Of course, General Eisenhower was a beloved friend of baseball and a man who himself loved baseball. Under a program which I have promulgated to all the clubs previously, all baseball games on Monday, which is the day of the funeral services for the general at National Cathedral in Washington, will be delayed until after the completion of those services and an hour thereafter, and then they will commence with an appropriate memorial tribute, which I have outlined.
Commissioner, I'd like to turn to the statement announcing the apology by Judge Roy Hofheinz, the owner of the Astros. Your statement, you said that hopefully the Rusty Staub affair is now closed. Is it?
Well, the one thing that remains to be done is to see to it that the Houston club gets fair value for Don Clendenin. Now, I had set a hearing for yesterday to determine that question, but both clubs asked me if I would defer that hearing until they could continue their negotiations to work something out on that, and I'm quite optimistic that they will work something out on that that's satisfactory to them both.
Commissioner, what about the suit that the judge has initiated to get Staub returned to Houston?
I couldn't tell you the status of that. I do not think it presents any problem.
Mm-hmm. It's been said that if you hadn't taken a strong stand in the Staub affair, you and your office might have been undermined. Do you feel that way, Commissioner?
Well, I don't know if you can put it quite that way. In this job, you've got to do what you think is right within the existing agreements and rules of baseball, and you've got to see to it that your directives are carried out. And that's what I've tried to do and will continue to try to do in every case.
Well, after several months as Commissioner, is the job everything you thought it might be, or has it turned out to be something a little more?
Oh, I'd say it's everything and then some. It's got some fascinating challenges, I think perhaps you've noticed, and it's a fascinating job. Perhaps it takes more hours a day than I realized it would. I'd say 48 in a day would just about meet the needs of the job. I haven't been able to quite find that many.
Let me ask you this important question. Are you enjoying it?
I'd say 75% of the time, yes, but I don't think it's realistic to expect to enjoy a job all the time.
Well, Commissioner Bowie Kuhn, we want to thank you for being our guest on Monitor's Open Line.
It's been my pleasure, Len.
Len Dillon for Monitor Sports.
That's what you're doing. Alexander Karasov with Kaschuk. WVAB Virginia Beach serves Tidewater, Virginia.
And we'll serve more monitor to all the NBC stations after a brief timeout.
Morgan back shortly.
I'm Petula Clark, one of the Now people, joining Roscoe next week here on NBC Radio.
Don't you just leave your darling out of it. Here's my letter. Lean back and stay a while now. Here's my letter.
Manata? They don't sing well, but they might as well, you know, pronounce them. Well, we're going to hear about taxes on income and taxes in the land in this half hour. We're continuing with our regular programming, but NBC News will bring you coverage of the ceremonies for former President Eisenhower in the Capitol about an hour from now.
Listen for the love song. Listen for the love song. If you think your chance for love is growing slim, you'll be all alone some night when lights are dim. Then across a crowd in your eyes see him.
Song.
Here's a reminder from your FTD florist. Easter Sunday's just around the corner, and now is the time to call or visit your nearby FTD florist. When you order early, he'll assure on-time delivery, even save you money on out-of-town orders. And this year, there's more. Many FTD florists can send a combination of flowers and candy, but flowers plus or flowers alone, the time to order for Easter is now. The one who can make it all happen is your FTD florist.
The men who run the government are paid by us through our tax money. Yet one of their obligations is to keep an eye on government spending for us. Earlier this week, Senator William Proxmire of Wisconsin talked about taxation with Robert McCormick, NBC News, Washington.
Senator Proxmire, I understand you have some pretty good evidence now that the people in your state want to cut government spending.
Bob, you bet your life. I sent out 100,000 questionnaires all over my state and the rural areas, urban areas, and so forth. I got a tremendous response, much more than I'd anticipated. Matter of fact, I sent out a similar questionnaire 15 months ago where the principal question was Vietnam, rather than spending, and then I got about 5,000 responses. This time, 12,000 replies, indicating the feeling on this matter of government spending and taxing and so forth. The response I got astonished me because they were 24 to 1 in favor of holding spending down to this year's level or lower, which would mean a reduction of about $11.5 billion in the proposed 1970 budget. Now, that's how strong the taxpayers' revolt is. Matter of fact, whereas they felt that way about spending, they didn't feel quite as strongly about taxes. They were 2-1 against extending the surtax, emphatically against it, but nothing like this other. Then, in addition, I was impressed because often people say, well, hold down spending. But when you get specific with them, it's a different story. Well, I find that they were against every single major program for our government, against increasing spending to the level proposed in the budget. They were 10-1 in favor of holding down spending for military. They were even by a bigger margin in favor of holding down space spending. Of course, as they always are, they were against increased foreign aid spending. Foreign aid has no constituency. That's predictable. But they were also, I think kind of unfortunately, they were against increasing spending for education, for health, for welfare, for all the programs that we think we simply have to have. Now, they were by lesser margins, but you still had a majority who were opposed.
You mean, then, that they were most opposed to military spending and less vehemently opposed to spending for health and education?
Yes, and I think that's a pretty good judgment because, of course, if you're going to cut spending, that's where you're going to do it. As a matter of fact, so many of our civilian programs, we're locked in, we're frozen not only in interest on the national debt, but our whole Social Security program is under contract. Our veterans' pensions are under contract. Many other programs we simply couldn't cut even if we wanted to cut them. Whereas the military program, we have $81 billion, and we could cut that conceivably $10 or $15 billion, which I favor doing. As a matter of fact, I think we can do that without reducing our combat effectiveness. And it would translate to that big a reduction in actual government spending.
Senator William Proxmire. And the surtax is one of the things you have to be careful about this year. Figure it out according to the instructions on the form and pay it, or you'll be called in for an audit. A situation devoutly to be avoided, even eagerly to be avoided. You're on the monitor beacon. Pay it. Music on monitor. It's Classics 4 with Traces.
Ribbons from her hair, souvenirs.
Tip for drivers. If your car stops in traffic, well, that's a miserable experience. Getting started with a push from another car can be dangerous and can result in damage to an automatic transmission. If you can, get over to the side of the road. Then it's smart to get to a phone and call a professional serviceman. Won't save you any money, but it may save you worse trouble in the long run. Now this from State Farm.
This is Don Adams. Yesterday, a truck hit my parked car. I considered donating the remains of the car to the Museum of Modern Art. But instead, I called my State Farm agent. I knew that State Farm Mutual, the world's biggest car insurer, would take care of things in a hurry. My agent asked if I could drive the car over. I said no, but I could mail it to you.
For your car, your home, your life, and your health. State Farm is all you need to know about insurance.
Sleeves by Mason Williams. When the government owns land, it doesn't pay taxes on it, that figures, but it also poses some problems. Jay Miller reports from Tucson, Arizona, where sometimes is heard a discouraging word on the subject.
The first point that anyone discovers in talking about taxation in the Southwest is that precious little of the land pays any taxes at all. For example, here in Arizona, only 15% of the state's area is in private hands. The other 85% is tax-exempt government national parks, national forests, Indian reservations, state grazing land, and the like. Of course, this is offset by the fact that the state bears very little of the cost of the improvements on this land, so it about evens out. Also in Arizona, curiously enough, for the very rich, cattle growing and orchards offer attractive tax loopholes. But the most controversial facet of taxation here for the general taxpayer is a recent reappraisal program. At a cost of over $6 million, every piece of property, house, business, public utility, mine, ranch, etc., was freshly examined and reappraised. This was brought about by taxpayers suspecting and discovering that the same priced house or piece of real estate, but located in different counties, had widely differing tax bills depending on the local county assessor. So it was all gone over again on a fresh statewide basis. Generally speaking, the homeowner's taxes went down. However, now there are charges that the mines are about to get a different tax rate from the legislature, and we'll all be back where we started. And the final cherry on top of this brouhaha is the question, just how much is farmland really worth? The taxes, for example, for a farmer near suburban Phoenix may be only based on the value of the crops he's growing, but if he sells the land as a subdivision, he may become an instant millionaire. So the ferment goes on, reappraisal or not. Jay Miller reporting for Monitor from Tucson.
Jay Miller, the only man who can put a cherry on a brouhaha. More on taxes later. Hurting each other. Now for a report on the ceremonies in Washington this afternoon honoring former President Eisenhower, we switch to Carl Stern, NBC News at Washington National Cathedral.
The crowd of mourners which came through the night was choked off an hour ago as preparations began to move the body of the 34th President to the Capitol Rotunda, where it will lie in state for 24 hours, as have seven fallen presidents. About 17,000 persons passed into the small Bethlehem Chapel beneath the sanctuary of the National Cathedral. Complete plans were worked out and approved by the general in 1966. Within moments, President and Mrs. Nixon will arrive. Members of the Eisenhower family have gathered, led by the widow, son John, and four grandchildren. In the way of life, one man replaces another, nature replenishing itself. David Eisenhower, who was the apple of his grandfather's eye, is 21, passing into manhood tomorrow, as the principal funeral service will be held. A slight snow is falling. The temperature is about 40 degrees, reducing the size of the crowd. Many have remained following Palm Sunday services. There will be five of them today here at the cathedral. Later this afternoon, a memorial service will be held for Martin Luther King Jr., who delivered the sermon here a year ago, just a week before his death. The dean of the cathedral, Francis Sayre, today in his sermon, likened the former president and Dr. King as kindlers of the hopes of the nation. 5 minutes from now, the joint guard of honor will be released and the joint casket bearer detail posted at the casket. The casket will be borne to the hearse as the Marine Corps band again plays Hail to the Chief and a hymn. Foreign representatives who will fall in behind the casket include Prime Minister Gorton of Australia, Lord Mountbatten representing Queen Elizabeth, the Shah of Iran. Prince Kama of Botswana is here, as are delegations from Ireland, Luxembourg, and India. Governors, Supreme Court members, cabinet members are here. Chief Justice Earl Warren arrived moments ago. Just coming in now, Governor Maddox of Georgia. In about 20 minutes, the procession will move off downtown. In sight of the White House, the casket will be transferred to a military caisson with a slow formal ride to the rotunda. The body of the former president will be returned here Monday for services. Then comes the last homecoming of Dwight David Eisenhower, the trip by train to Abilene, Kansas. Carl Stern, NBC News at the Washington National Cathedral.
When the ceremonies begin, we will bring them to you about half an hour from now. Next, then we'll be back. Morgan for Monitor.
Here on Radar 11, 7 across 11. Here on coming in. How about you?
Are you a consistent loser because of your gambling? Are you losing your wages, your savings, and your loved ones? Then it's possible that you are suffering from a serious illness known as compulsive gambling. A compulsive gambler gets progressively worse as he continues to gamble. If you have a desire to end this constant turmoil and want help to live a normal life, contact Gamblers Anonymous by calling Murray Hill 97500. Don't gamble with your life.
Hi, this is Big Wilson. I can't believe what I just heard. Charlie Brown's wife is a thief. Said she was going to cover the floors with hooked rugs.
Oh!
Is that worth 5,000 Triple S blue stamps? Well, I think so. And so will you when you listen to my show and find out why. The Big Wilson Show weekdays, 9 to noon on WNBC Radio 660.
Psychologically speaking, it's Dr. Joyce Brothers. Weeknights, 7:45 to 9 on WNBC Radio 660, New York.